to get intimate with Checkpoint Intimates.
Yes, welcome to another episode of Checkpoint Intimates. We are your weekly gaming podcast where two members of the Checkpoint team go one-on-one, get down, dirty, and intimate on a particular gaming topic. My name is Elliot, joined by Cameron, who's already annoyed at me.
Oh, what's disgusting. Happened? Down what's and happened, dirty. Buddy? How dare you?
What's the matter?
I'm always offended.
Tell Papa.
Oh, don't!
Toss it on my lap.
Oh, I am so uncomfortable.
And that is the exact state I like to keep you in.
It is, God.
So on today's podcast, we want to talk specifically about designing an engaging open world for a video game. We've seen plenty of good examples in the past. We've seen plenty of bad examples of the past. So this is kind of a do's and don'ts of creating your open world game.
I think it's important to really call out a catalyst that triggered this within us at the moment, which is we've both been playing a new game from Avalanche Studios called Generation Zero. And while it opened quite marvelously and there are a lot of positives to its world building, there are also some very glaring negatives to it.
Yep.
And I think there's world building is, I think, one of the most important parts in a game these days. You know, games these days, people explore them, especially in an open world game. People explore and they go to every nook and cranny, and they like small details. Gamers are paying attention to that these days. You know, I love being able to walk into a room and be like, oh, something's happened here. Let me piece it together. And while Generation Zero began that way, and there are certain moments where you get a feeling for that, some parts of the world, it's just a bit same.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, you're right. The game started well. It created great atmosphere. It was a little bit scary. You didn't quite know what was going on. The whole premise of this game is that you're like, you went on a little holiday with your friends. You came back and everybody's gone. You don't know what's happening. This is post-World War II in Sweden. So it creates this kind of backstory and things that make you really want to explore and find out what's happened.
I got
so
spooked.
Yeah, for sure. Me too.
And I was worried about going out to that cop car. I was like, I was sitting in the house being like, I don't want to go to the cop car.
But here's the problem. If you create a good premise and you create this feeling within people that they want to learn more, they want to explore, they want to find out what has happened to civilization and find out the mysteries that are really kind of in this world. If you're incapable of creating an engaging open world, which is what the game is, it's an open world game. If you can't create an engaging open world, all of that premise is gone.
Yep.
You no longer care about the people. You no longer care about the atmosphere. It's just completely drained and sapped out of you.
Which can be seen if anyone was to ever, like, if we had been streaming our gameplay, you can watch as we were like, ooh, ooh, over here, ooh, over that, to by the end where we were like, okay. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So let's highlight some of the specific problems, and I'm not going to beat around the bush too much. I'm kind of sick of that with this game, to be honest.
Oh.
It's really, really bad in some aspects of its game design, and one of them is its world. This open world is really badly designed. Now, one of the obvious issues is that all the structures, all the buildings that you come across are copy and paste of one another.
Yes.
This is a world, and I remember when we first started seeing it, Cam, you were like, oh, I bet, like, 1980 Sweden, they were very, like, the houses were probably all very samey, and, like, there were some excuses coming up. And they were funny, and they were flippantly said.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't being serious in any way, shape, or form.
But, like, there was the potential that was accurate.
Yes.
The further you explore, the more you realize that's total bullshit, because it's not just the houses that are the same. Every bunker you come across is the same. The same doghouse is found in the back of every single house. The same shed template is everywhere. I've found, remember early in the game you come across the church?
Yep.
It's one of the only unique areas.
Yep.
So I thought.
Oh, you found more of the church.
There are more churches, and they all have the exact same template and layout. They all have the same kind of upstairs area that leads into the kind of
you got the organ upstairs, and then you go into the bell tower, and then there's a room out the back.
I am sick of seeing the same. There's a building that is constructed on the water that is like a little kind of boat dock.
Yep.
I've seen that so many times now because this game takes place on an archipelago. So there's a lot of water involved, a lot of like water-based towns. And man, I reckon I could count the amount of structures this game actually has on two hands. Like, it doesn't go any further than that.
Yeah. So I think, so one of the things that it touches on this is a world that feels lived in is a must. It's a big do. A world that feels
it's
like
a big do.
It's a big do. Because we're talking do's and don'ts.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes so much more sense in that context.
A big do is a world that feels not like it's just been generated on a computer. I said playing The Division 2 at the moment as well.
Yeah.
That is a world that for sure feels lived in. It's a world that feels like there's variety in it. And I know it's a much bigger studio, but I think one of the big things I noticed is even... I think the big thing is they've made enough variety in their template that maybe I have seen that car five times, but maybe that car has a different kind of shrubbery all over it, or
yeah, I don't has think we're saying scratches that on it. Every single asset has to be entirely uniquely developed from the ground up. I think it's pretty normal for developers to reuse assets, copy paste here and there, but then they change it, right?
You need an algorithm to create a slight amount of randomization off a template that you're working on. Not just
like physically go in there and like detail your world so that, you know, all the small details are different. Well, like in Generation Zero, the same house template will have the same backpack with loot in it strung up in the same spot in every house.
They've got the same radio in the same spot.
They're not even trying.
The same bed in the right room past the kitchen always has the sheets pulled back at just the same like amount, and the one on the left has been freshly made.
It makes you feel like you're not walking in a real world. You're walking in a lazily put together video game, or probably, honestly, a rushed video game. It actually feels like this is what I told you, Cam, when we were playing it. Generation Zero feels like a survival world, but with a single, with a campaign, like a traditional kind of shooter kind of campaign put into it.
Yeah.
Survival games, similar to Battle Royale, they create the map, but it's not the focus of the game. Like, you're not exploring in the way that you're creating narrative and finding information. It's just kind of there so that you can run around and do what you need to do.
Look, that's quite interesting that you bring up Battle Royales then. Let's talk about Battle Royale worlds in terms of Fortnite, Apex Legends, and PUBG.
Well, PUBG is notorious for the kind of copy and paste style, I think. Certainly Fortnite and Apex have done a better job of it, but before those games, like, we've had a string of battle royales that really were like, the worlds were, they were fine, they were cool, but they weren't special, they weren't unique, they were definitely reusing assets, they were definitely, it kind of felt like a big open world was made and like buildings were copied and dragged and placed, and you know, that's okay. Like, it served a function for those games because you're not playing those games to go, oh my God, look at this spectacular area. You're playing those games to say, where's the loot? I need to get to it. I need to kill people.
That's interesting you say that, because one thing that I have when I'm playing a game that I find really interesting, if I can go into a building, if I can go into a house, I can immediately tell if that house is livable in or not. So if I walk in and I go, well, this makes no sense. That plays in my head. I can't unthink
What's an
that.
Example? Like, of why a house might be unlivable.
Well, in terms of, like, you walk in, you're like, wait, but this doesn't have... you walk in, it's like two rooms. There were certain areas in, like, when we would walk into a house in Generation Zero where I'd be like, I don't see how this house works. Some of them did. Like, but sometimes they would, like, cut off a little bit of it to make a little bit of variety. Yeah. Like, they'd cut off some of the rooms and be like, but this house no longer makes sense to me. So I feel like I walk into rooms where I'm like, but there's no bedroom in this house. Or there's no bathroom in this house.
Right.
Not necessarily Generation Zero, because they always had that bathroom upstairs.
Yeah.
But, like, when I walk into a game and I'll be like, this house doesn't make any sense at all.
Mm.
And I notice that. And I don't know if that's just me, but that's the kind of thing I notice. I walk into a shop in a thing and I'm like, why doesn't this shop have a back room?
Yeah.
Like, I notice those things. I don't know why, but like that takes me out of
it. No, okay. Because you're aware of those things. I mean, you do work, you know, your current job is about, you know, the layout of a store. So
that's
you're going to notice
actually.
when a store doesn't have a back room.
I work in visual merchandising, so maybe I'm always... And, like, even Rose says, like, in our house, I'm always kind of visual merchandising our house. Like, am I purely paying attention to layout all the time is because it's important to me in my day-to-day?
Yeah, which is okay. And I think we all have those kind of areas of expertise where we kind of see through the veil and it's like, oh, hang on a second. Like, your average person might see this and go, yeah, that makes sense. But the experts in the field will go, hang on, this is ludicrous.
I also want to talk about worlds that feel properly interconnected. And I want to talk about a game that you're playing right now.
What am I playing right now?
You're playing Sekiro right now.
I am playing Sekiro.
And From Software made a name for themselves for creating worlds that felt properly interweaved and interconnected.
Yeah.
In believable ways.
Well, I don't... I think a distinction has to be made between, like... I don't know that you call a From Software game open world. It is in the sense that there are, like, many paths you can take. There's no linearity to it. But those paths are often linear in themselves. There are just multiple of them. It's almost like a branching kind of design.
I would say it is a I would say it's an ever-expanding open world in the sense that by the end of it, you can kind of get around very easily through it into what becomes an open map.
The amazing thing about From Software games, and this remains in Sekiro, is you don't even have a map. And that's because the game is well enough designed that it like, you know where you're going. You know when you make a shortcut that you can just cut through here to get to the next area. You're, like, you're kind of just aware of where the world is. You couldn't do that in, a fully open world game because you'd get lost immediately.
Well, it's interesting. Do you remember, DayZ, how you had the map, but you had no marker on the map?
DayZ is actually exactly what Generation Zero makes me feel like.
Yeah. So I... But, like... But not as much fun?
Well, DayZ had the added elements of player versus player and the constant tension of, you know, where's this person going to be?
But also, its glitchy zombies were kind of fun to deal with.
Sure.
Like, in terms of, like, I don't know, I don't find the enemies in Generation Zero that exciting to fight.
I think they're fine. I don't think they're exceptional.
But, like, what I mean is, like, in Generation Zero, they've done something similar where you pull out a map, but then you're a big icon on the map. And I'm like, I feel like I would have loved it if you went the full immersion instead. And there was no icon on that map. And I'm like, oh God, where am I? I'm, oh, okay, that structure's that, and this is over here.
No, I don't know. That makes me feel like the game would become even more tedious.
But DayZ, I really loved the way that you would open up your map and be like, oh God, where am I? Yeah. What is this street name?
I think it's cool, and I think it works to some games.
You have to then, obviously, Generation Zero would have to be redesigned in such a way that there would be things that you can
use. You need landmarks.
Landmarks.
If the game has the same assets reused over and over again, that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, I love those kind of games where it's like, here's a big map. Oh, okay, there's that street. Oh, here I am, I'm here. Like, that kind of, I feel that ties into world building as well, because it makes you pay attention to your map so much more. And cartography is so important in a good open world. Like, that's a big thing. If you can't have good cartography and good, like, actual proper planning of the landscape, all the assets you put on top of it mean nothing.
Yeah. And I think the more unique stuff you see, the more you want to explore. I will give a shout out to one of, like, a series of games that, despite all the criticism that this developer gets, they do this really well. Bethesda makes a good open world game because the areas you uncover are actually different from one another. You know, you're playing Breath of the Wild, and you come across yet another kind of puzzle structure. What are those things called?
The shrines.
You play the Witcher 3 and you come across yet another monster den or yet another, like, bandit camp or something. You play a Fallout game and you can walk in any direction and everything you find is different. Nothing is the same kind of copy and paste stuff, and everything has its own unique feel and atmosphere and whatever, right? And they do a really good job of that, and I think the more games are able to create unique and different and surprising things just for pure exploration, doesn't have to be attached to, like, a quest or anything like that. It can just be the fact that you come across a bunker with, like, you know, three dead corpses and a handwritten note kind of giving backstory. And it's like, oh, I'm just learning about this and this is so unique and different.
I talk a lot of trash about Bethesda. That's just the end of that sentence. but every Bethesda game, the most time I've spent with it has been, I'm just going to walk that way.
Yeah,
and I'm
going to
see what happens. And just stumbling upon something, I'm like, oh, what? Like, I love going into cities in Bethesda games. Cities are just so interesting. Like, especially the Fallout games, these derelict cities that have broken down and looking at them and being like, oh, how did this... Oh, what was this building? Oh. And, like, just taking them apart. Like, they are... there's a lot of things wrong with Bethesda games. And again, that's the end of the sentence. But their world building is impeccable.
Yeah.
600 books were written for Skyrim.
That's a lot of books.
600. And, like, yeah, it's, they're not all great.
Wait, who wrote these books?
They had writers. They had a team of 6 writers, I think it was, or 10 writers, wrote all of these books. Just, and there's something like 150 of them are just history books, some are comedy, some are instructional, but these are written books.
These that games is, have lore and a lot.
That is world building that no one ever, like, that is just an off it's chance that someone picks it up and goes, oh, I'll just read through this.
Yeah, yeah.
The level of detail. And it's, quite often, it's at least, I would say, you know, sometimes up to 10, 15 pages worth of content just on that one book. Like, they're not huge, like,
so we're talking about novels. In-game books.
In-game books.
Because I didn't know that's what you're talking about when we initially started this conversation.
I'm talking, there are 600 in-game books.
Yeah, you're like playing a game, you look at a bookshelf, and you read a book.
And you read a book. You get nothing from that except learning more about the world.
Exactly.
And those books exist. And it's not just history. It's not just instructional. They've created works of fiction in this world.
Yeah.
Bethesda does a lot of things wrong. Its world building is 100% right.
Yep. I think outside of world building and unique kind of stuff, the other big one for me in a good open world is the way they handle density. Mm-hmm. I think Generation Zero, to bring it back to that, is a very open game. There's not much density, as in you can walk through a forest for ages before you reach the next town. Yep. Sometimes you don't come across an enemy for 10 minutes of the game, and that just equates to downtime, where you're really not doing anything. That reminds me yet again of the survival and the battle royale genre, where there is a lot of that kind of open space and running and hiding and not much actual, like, density to it.
That one I want to pull back to Apex Legends, because I think that does really well. There's always something on the horizon that you can go to.
Yeah.
That's a really important thing, I think, is being able to see something and be like, what's that? I want to go there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, your traditional open world games, they have to have something to do. They have to have some level of density. But if it's too dense, then it becomes overwhelming.
It needs breadcrumbs.
Yeah, because you want that mix. You want exploration. You want, like, the occasional trek to find something amazing. But you don't want the whole game to feel like you're just wandering around a forest.
And it also can be, like, I remember there's one bit in Fallout where you're walking for some time through kind of like a, you know, decrepit area. And then there's just this hut. And that hut had something interesting in it. And I'm like, oh, what's this?
What is this?
Oh, I'll have a look in here. So, like, we're not saying that it needs to have, like, massive structures constantly pinpointing, but it needs to have something to break it up. If you're just walking through the same forest for ages and you get nothing out of it apart from, like, a kind of pretty, you know, scenic look at the area.
Mm.
It just, I don't know.
Can I point out a pet peeve for me and open world games? The thing I hate the most when I play an open world game, and I think I'm directly contradicting what you said earlier, I hate big cities. The way I play an open world game is I want to experience everything. I want to look in every nook and cranny. I want to make sure I haven't missed any loot. I want to make sure I've seen every bit of content this game has to offer me. So when I arrive at a big city, it's not a, oh my god, I wonder what's here, let's explore. It's an, oh, this is a 5-hour slog for me to just see everything that's in this city.
Can I?
A checklist. It's a task.
Can I break you off on that?
Yeah.
Can I say, are you talking about, like, a hub world big city filled with NPCs and things that need to be done? Because that's not what I was talking about.
Both, honestly. It's okay. Both.
Because in Fallout, I love that kind of decrepit, fallen apart area. I don't like going, like, in Fallout 4, I hated going into that stupid stadium. But everything around that stadium, I love just kind of delving in. I think I'm the opposite to you, because I love an open world where I'm going to miss things.
Yeah, see, I wish I could adapt that mentality, but, like, you know, I play Fallout and I get to a big town and it's just a grind for me because I want to look, I want to make sure I get all the loot. I don't want to miss everything. So I'm going into every building. I'm going to every, like, you know, sewer system and making sure I've seen it all. And all of a sudden it's this big task. And then you go to games like Divinity Original Sin, which is another open world game. But those towns you come across, those hub worlds, they are totally different. They are like NPCs everywhere, quests everywhere. But so once again, it's just, and it's like, I dread those areas, because I know for a fact there are 20 quests and I am running back and forth between this town, and I've got to somehow look into every room and try to sneak my way and pickpocket and like picklock my way into every room, and this one town could be 10 hours worth of content just because I'm waiting to move on to the next thing.
Can I tell you, okay, so you got to say your pet peeve?
Yes.
Can I say mine?
Yeah.
I hate gathering resources. I hate, pick up every flower that you pass because you'll use it for a potion later.
Well, you probably won't, actually.
You will not. So this was one of my biggest gripes with Dragon Age Inquisition, which wasn't fully open world, but featured quite large explorable open world maps. So kind of big, kind of like small open worlds, multiples of them. And like, I hated just being like, oh, make sure you pick up all these flowers as you run past them. I'm like, just do away with that.
Is there an inventory system?
Yeah.
So it's all about...
No, it doesn't take up your inventory at all.
Uh-huh.
No. You just gather them up over
time. It is still like this extra thing that is definitely not fun, but you have to do it. And it's not even that you have to do it. It's that you feel you have to do it, or else you're not utilizing this mechanic that the game developers have put in there for you to utilize.
I also hate...
Yes.
Hate. And it kind of goes off this as well. Picking up like lore books to read through and listening to like the audio logs that you got to pick up so that they can tell the story. I'm like, no, tell me a story with your world.
Well,
show, don't tell, because that's his telling me right now.
The audio log thing is funny because I remember this conversation coming up a lot around the release of Fallout 76. In previous Fallout games, you were going to towns talking to NPCs and it was very real. It was very, like, it felt like a game. But Fallout 76 made the transition. There were no NPCs. So you're going to these towns and finding audio logs and saying, and it's always the same thing. It's like, we've moved on. Bandits outrun us. Like, we're heading over to this area. We may need rescue. Come join us when you're available. So you get to the new area and you pick up a new audio log. Oh, we've moved on. There were no water supplies here. We're making our way down south to this settlement. And the whole time you're chasing ghosts. You never see the result. The whole game, it feels like, you know, it doesn't matter if you're 5 minutes behind the NPCs or if you're in a world 100 years later and all the audio logs are still there, because it's the same result. So it feels like you're so out of the game, you're so out of, like, nothing matters. And you know you're chasing ghosts, you know you're never going to get the resolution you want, and you're just kind of going through the motions anyway. Generation Zero does the exact same thing.
Oh, that letter that you're constantly chasing your parents.
It gets worse.
I don't even know if it's your parents. That's really unclear.
By the end, you're just trying to find civilization, and there are so many quests in that game that are just about trying to hunt down people who seem to be moving from one bunker to the next, and you never actually come across them. And I assume, at this point, I haven't finished the game, I assume you never come across them. So, what's the point? Why am I playing this?
They're the robots the whole time.
Blah, 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 bum, bum, blah, blah. So, I think that's another part theme of open world games. They have to feel real. They have to, like, put in some effort to make the world believable. If you're just following after NPCs who no longer exist, then you may as well be in a simulation. Like, it's not a real world.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. We're in a...
So detaching, that's the problem.
Yeah, we're in a state of gaming at the moment where I think making believable worlds is... We've reached a point where narrative is important. We're getting much better with narrative. Your world now needs to be as believable as your narrative. And unfortunately, not every game has that.
Do you have a favorite, like, open world as far as the world design is considered?
I know I, like, God, I wasn't prepared for that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a weird one. And I know I'll get trash for this. But I always really enjoyed exploring, and it's an MMO world.
Yeah.
But I always really enjoyed exploring the Guild Wars 2 world.
I don't see why you'd get trash for that. That was a cool world.
Yeah, I know, but people are always like, oh, MMOs. It's so,
I mean,
like,
MMOs have handled
things.
Open world so badly in the past that maybe,
but I found
Guild
that one
Wars
was like
different.
I enjoyed exploring. I enjoyed going around and looking at things.
Guild
like,
Wars 2 was an adaptive world as well.
Yeah,
things changed. So the developers like had these moments within the game's kind of development where they're like, ah, this place has been ruined.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my God, like the world felt real.
And like you would go to like a little town and it felt like a proper little town. And like it just, that world was fun to, yeah. Like I spent more time, I think, just going to new places and being like, I want to find all the like, because there was like, you could go to locations and trigger a little like thing where it'd be like, oh, yeah. Look at the pretty scene.
There's like vantage points or vantage something
points,
like that.
Vantage points, that's it, vantage points. And yeah. So I would be like, I want to find all the vantage points. And there'd be like jumping puzzles hidden amongst it. And there'd yep. be like areas you could go off that were interesting. I thought that was a really good open world. It's not so much an open world either, but I actually really enjoy the Resident Evil 2 remake's kind of take on the world because it feels lived in.
Yeah.
And like when you, especially fair. In that main building, it gets a bit dubious once you leave the main building and the things get a bit all over the place.
Yeah.
But that first main building, oh, I see the operation here, even though it was like used to be an art gallery. The interweavedness of it and the way it works makes sense to me.
Yeah, for sure. I think there are a lot of good examples of open world games out there. Unfortunately, there are a lot of bad examples. Yeah. I don't know that there is a perfect formula. I think people have to change it up and see what works for their specific game. And that's really all it comes down to.
I think it's also very important on like the setting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some sci-fi, what you won't do the same setting for like horror or for, adventure, fantasy. Like you won't have the same setting for them.
I kind of want a Legend of Zelda horror game now.
God, wouldn't that be awesome? Well, do you know what? It wouldn't be hard to do. There's some really weird stuff in that. We could just do Majora's Mask again with a bit more of a push to the horror.
Yeah, I'm down for it. Anyway, thank you for joining me, Cam.
Thank you for having me, Elliot.
We've been talking all about crafting, you know, a really compelling open world video game.
We apologize. It was a bit rambly, this one.
Oh, was it?
Oh, just in terms of like...
I thought we were on topic. I thought we were concise. Oh, no,
we were totally on topic. But I just feel like this was us like just...
I kind of feel attacked.
We were ranting.
I feel like us ranting is 90% of the content we create for Checkpoint.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, join us next week. More Checkpoint podcast goodness is coming up.
You've been listening to Checkpoint Intimates. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher.